We have been hearing services and ceremonies to mark the September 11th attacks 20 years later. The shock and horror of those attacks changed dramatically the U.S.'s approach to security at home and overseas. Expanded government powers were approved with little opposition in Congress or opposition from an American public that was shaken by the attacks and feared more. And today, President George W. Bush, of course, who was in office at the time, spoke at Shanksville, Pennsylvania, where passengers wrested control from the hijackers of United Flight 93, crashing it into a field there. Here's some of what President Bush said.
So much of our politics has become a naked appeal to anger, fear, and resentment. That leaves us worried about our nation and our future together. I come without explanations or solutions.
We're joined now by NPR senior Washington editor and correspondent Ron Elving. Ron, thanks so much for being with us.
Good to be with you, Scott.
He offered, of course, no explanations or solutions. It does make us recall there was a bipartisan approach to America's security establishment following the shock of those September 11th attacks, wasn't there?
Yes, there was a great deal of unity for a period of time, and Congress was willing to give President Bush just about anything that he asked for, and his approval ratings went to 90%, and he asserted that we were going to have our retribution on the terrorists who had struck America.
Help us understand how the security establishment and strategic interests of the U.S. changed in those days.
It wasn't quite overnight, but it did seem that way compared to years of complacency, really, on the national security front after the fall of the Soviet Union. We didn't think we had any global rivals, and many of us were unaware of the Islamic world, especially the portions of it that were resentful toward the United States. This was a world we had ignored or dismissed for far too long.
God bless America, my home sweet home.
It was an impromptu choir of scores of members of Congress straggling back to the Capitol after the all clear had sounded, lingering on the steps, still in shock, wondering what might be next.
I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
That was President George W. Bush at the smoking ruins of the World Trade Center in New York 3 days after the attack, sounding a theme that would reverberate for the next 20 years. America had been knocked down, but America would be back, and someone would be sorry.
Our war on terror begins with Al-Qaeda, but it does not end there.
Indeed, it did not end. The terror organization associated with 9/11 would be routed from its base in Afghanistan in a matter of weeks, but the fighting there would stretch on another 20 years, until last month, when the U.S. ceded the country back to the Taliban. Bush and three succeeding presidents sent troops to Afghanistan using not a declaration of war, but a congressional authorization for the use of military force, or AUMF, enacted in 2001 and still in effect today. Also in 2001, Congress enacted a sweeping security law known as the Patriot Act, giving the government unprecedented powers of surveillance and investigation. Together, these laws would empower the Bush administration as it went after the Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden. Failing to capture him, the Bush administration turned to a variety of other targets, international and domestic. The AUMF and Patriot Act were used to justify ground troops, bombings, drone strikes, and indefinite detention at foreign sites. The U.S. created an offshore prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, for holding hundreds of suspected terrorists and enemy combatants captured in Afghanistan, Iraq, and elsewhere. Closer to home, Congress created a new behemoth of national security called the Department of Homeland Security. It combined 22 agencies from the Secret Service to the peacetime Coast Guard. The new Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency took over, as did a new version of transportation security, searching luggage and passengers at airports. Congress also approved a second AUMF, this specifically for Iraq. Bush acknowledged Iraq had not been involved in the 9/11 attacks, but he accused its dictator Saddam Hussein of being a supporter of terrorism and a developer of weapons of mass destruction. Here's Bush addressing the nation in March of 2003.
My fellow citizens, At this hour, American and coalition forces are in the early stages of military operations to disarm Iraq, to free its people, and to defend the world from grave danger.
Bush was reelected in 2004, largely on the strength of his response to 9/11. But even then, support for the war on terror was waning. And revulsion was rising as Americans heard reports of torture, such as waterboarding and other techniques used to obtain information about potential attacks. The administration denied allegations of torture. This is CIA Director George Tenet in 2007 on CBS's 60 Minutes.
Well, we don't torture people. Let me say that again to you. We don't torture people.
Yet as early as 2004, CBS News and others had obtained photographs of life inside a prison in Iraq known as Abu Ghraib, where U.S. personnel had subjected prisoners to physical and sexual abuse. Documents known as the torture papers would emerge years after the invasion of Iraq to show the use of torture had been accepted. The theory was that the Geneva Convention, the International Rules of War, did not apply. But the U.S. Supreme Court would hold in 2006 that the rules indeed did apply. And by 2014, the agency admitted that it did use those techniques. Over the course of two decades, such moral conflicts and other forms of fallout from 9/11 have become a permanent part of our history and a part of who we are. And while we observe the day of 9/11 and honor all we lost that day, we also count the costs that came in the years that followed.
NPR's Ron Elving, let me turn to you again. Long as we worked together, I don't know what that day was like for you at NPR.
I was the managing, supervising editor on the Washington desk at the time, and we had reporters in the field. We had reporters going to the Capitol. We had reporters at the White House. We had reporters wherever we would normally have them. Plus, of course, the international desk's force around the world. All of these people, of course, were in danger in some sense or another, or we believed they might very well be. The buildings were being evacuated. American embassies were being evacuated. People were expecting further attacks. There was talk of a second wave. There was talk of another airplane. And before it went down in Pennsylvania, we knew there was at least one airplane coming back to the East Coast, and it was believed to be coming to Washington and believed to be coming to the U.S. Capitol. So there was a great deal of fear, but you could not really spend any time on that because you just had to keep moving things around to find out as much as you could, get people safe, but get people so they can get you information and go on the air and report it.
Good to remind ourselves in those hours and in those days that follows, there was no reassurance that the attack was over. There were credible reports that that other attacks were being planned and were on the way. I must say, our group doing this show today, a couple of the same people came in overnight because, of course, air transportation was halted. And it is gratifying to still hear from people who were driving overnight and anxious to try and reach someplace who tuned into NPR's coverage, which was a good to know a kind of companion for them, but at a time we needed information and a form of reassurance. The political landscape looks altogether different now, doesn't it, than it did 20 years ago?
It does, but much of that landscape was shaped over these last 20 years by some of the forces that were unleashed by 9/11 and by the fear that I referred to a moment ago, which was not simply a Washington, D.C. phenomenon or a New York City phenomenon by any means. There were cities all over the country that were expecting attacks, and we were told to expect attacks in other places. So everyone got extraordinarily focused on national security. We created the Department of Homeland Security, and we reordered the priorities of much of what our government did around simply protecting people from terrorists. And not that that wasn't the thing to do, because of course it was, but to some degree, what has always been a great American blessing, which was the freedom to not be all that concerned with politics if you didn't choose to be, we lost some of that with 9/11. And since then, I think we've been much more consumed with our politics.
And I'm struck a lot of people will quote former President Bush's Caution Today, where he referred to extremism in our politics at home, which seemed to be pretty undeniably a reference to the events of January 6th and groups that have formed.
He linked it to the threat to the Capitol that was posed on 9/11, and of course this threat to the Capitol is still very much with us.
Yeah. I wonder what these thoughts are now, 20 years after, if anniversaries to come are going to be a little easier for families.
One hopes, of course, that would be the case, but in some respects, just because it's a big one, a decade, a 20, a zero on the end, makes it a little bit heavier, and we hope that with time, people will find peace.
NPR's Ron Elving, thanks so much for being with us today during all the coverage that we have needed to do. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Scott.